How Curious is sponsored by the Oklahoma City Community Foundation.
Former First Lady Donna Nye has always had a passion for leveling the playing field for Oklahoma citizens who are developmentally disabled. A group of her closest friends decided to establish the Donna Nye Foundation in honor of the commitment and work she was doing in this area.
We've worked with the Nyes for so long that we really have a feel for their passion and their heart for giving.
If you care about causes that help citizens with developmental disabilities, join us. The Oklahoma City Community Foundation will help you make it happen.
Hello, I'm Rachel Hopkin, and this is KGOU's How Curious.
My character is Solus.
Solus.
It's a Star Wars character that I've kind of transformed for medieval.
I ran into Solus at the medieval fair of Norman earlier this month. Although he was very personable, he looked quite menacing. He was dressed in all black and wore a forbidding dark grey and red full coverage facial mask.
I've hand sewn this robe. Well, I had some help, but now I know how to do it myself. And then I've 3D printed this mask. It's based off of Star Wars The Old Republic. It's a Sith acolyte.
This was my first visit to the fair, and I was slightly perplexed.
In what way is it medieval?
Essentially, just in that I've traded the lightsaber for a wand that I made. But the way I kind of justify it is Star Wars starts out a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. So a long time ago.
Solus told me he's been coming to the medieval fair every year that he's lived in Norman since 2018.
What brings you here?
I don't know, the atmosphere. I love getting to see everybody dressed up and all the little knickknacks you can buy, and it gives me a chance to be someone else entirely. Not because I don't like who I am, but it's fun to dress up and see the reactions and that sort of thing.
My encounter with Solus highlighted a number of recurrent themes of Norman's medieval fair, which celebrated its 50th iteration in 2026. Embracing escapism, a delight in dressing up and role-playing, and an often somewhat loose approach to historical accuracy. I saw mermaids and fairies and those in steampunk garb, amid others who looked somewhat more medievalish, for the want of a better word. All this amid a cornucopia of goings-on, all-day live music and other performances, scores of food and arts and crafts vendors, plus various opportunities to participate in activities that you might not see in your usual everyday life.
Oh, take a knee!
Now it's an arm.
So we are a Fight the Night booth, a sword fighting booth.
This is Ducky Walker.
Step into the arena, beat the love into your friends, family, your foes.
So how do you do the sword combat? What are the instructions?
It's Monty Python.
I think that means it's based on the travails of the Black Knight in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
So if you get hit in the arm, you lose the arm. Get hit in the leg, you lose the leg. Center mass is instant death.
And what kind of people tend to do this? I see you've got two young men.
All ages. I've seen people as all the way. If they're old enough to crawl, they're old enough to brawl.
Okay.
In the spirit of full transparency, I should mention that the Medieval Fair of Norman is put on by the University of Oklahoma Outreach, which is also the entity that oversees KGOU operations. And it belongs to the genre of festival that also encompasses Renaissance fairs. Although their names refer to two distinct historic periods, in this context, they share much in common, according to public historian Kate Kurtz.
So medieval and Renaissance fairs is really an interchangeable term. They all kind of are encompassed by this idea of the fair, but really all of the festivals are the same kind of macro and minor details of performance, education, craftsmanship. So really it's then the backdrop of the festival. Norman, for example, they're a medieval fair because they set their festival during the reign of King Edward III, and they're in the kind of the town of Avalon. So it really is just set dressing, and it kind of informs the type of characters you might see walking around the fair. But it's really interchangeable. All fairs are anachronistic to some degree.
Avalon, of course, is a mystical place from Arthurian legend, whilst King Edward III was a real English monarch who ruled for over 50 years during the 14th century. And in fact, the Norman medieval fair is set during one specific year of his reign, according to Anne-Marie Eckhart, the coordinator of the event.
We decided to stick with 1360 to make it easier to have focus for our cast.
of which there are over 50 official members, including the fair's very own King Edward III.
Prior to that, we've been all over the place. The Royal Court has been everything from fantasy to 900, 1100, going back and forth. People had to keep changing costumes. So we picked 1360 because it's the happiest year. We think the war is over. We don't yet know that it's going to be the Hundred Years' War. And our men are coming home from war. And everybody is happy. It's the peaceful and prosperous 1360. And we think the plague is gone because it's been gone for almost 2 years, even though it's going to come back next year.
Okay.
But since we don't know the future, we're very happy.
The very first medieval fair of Norman took place way back in 1977. Here's Kate Kurtz again.
The fair was originally organized by the University of Oklahoma English Department as a forum for students to engage with medieval scholarship and field interest in the humanities. Another goal was also to dispel the common frame that the medieval period was dark and somber, when in fact there's a period of intellectual and social activity. So there were a number of people involved in creating this original fair, but Chaucer scholars Sally Musetter and Don Rose are credited with kind of spearheading the project. So Musetter, she attended a fair back in Houston, Texas earlier that year, and she was inspired to bring it back to Norman. And then April was chosen as the month for the festival because it's William Shakespeare's birth month. And coincidentally, the first festival was held on April 23rd, which is kind of the contested birth date for Shakespeare.
I've talked to two of the people that were involved in the planning at the beginning of it.
We're back with Anne-Marie Eckhart.
And it's like, oh, we thought it would be just small. We'd just do it between some of the buildings on the South Oval.
That's an open area, which is part of the OU Norman campus.
They were really glad they changed their mind and did it at the top of the South Oval because they had a big attendance the very first year. Everybody loved it. They had people from SCA come up from Texas and do fighting in what was referred to as the Passion Pit at the time.
The SCA stands for the Society for Creative Anachronism, a non-profit which is dedicated to researching and recreating aspects of pre-17th century European life. And the Passion Pit is a sunken area on the South Oval.
Fine arts performed some dances and some pageant plays. There were high schools that came and performed some different plays. There was student organizations, like some folk dancers, that were performing throughout the day, and it was just an amazing first event.
That first Med Fair, as it's sometimes called, was part of a general vogue which had been fomenting for some time. Here's Kate Kurtz again.
The first Renaissance festival, as we know it today, appeared in the 1960s as a segment of counterculture in reaction to the Cold War. So in Laurel Canyon, you had all of these bohemians who were also, you know, including actors who'd been persecuted during the Red Scare. And some of them were Phyllis and Ron Patterson, who were working in Laurel Canyon. And while they were in there, they were kind of inspired by this early employment that Phyllis had there to teach drama to children. And so they're trying to figure out a way to instruct these like 80 children from like, you know, 6 to 12 on historical events while keeping them engaged. So they had this idea of bringing play into it. So they worked with the local radio station and they had the first Renaissance festival. And people attended. It was very popular. And I think it really just hit this period in American history in the 60s where medieval culture starts simmering again. Movies are coming out. Plays are popular. And I think part of it is you have the stress of, you know, the unrest of the 60s, especially as you get into the later 60s. And I think people start looking at ways of escapism. In history, you talk about the return to the land movement in the 60s, where like hippies are going back to, let's live off the land. And I see that also as well. Let's return so far back to the land. We're going to this fantastical era of chivalric knights, and there's heraldry, you know, blowing in the wind. And then after that, they slowly start dotting around the U.S.
Including, of course, here in Norman. Since that first fair, it's grown quite a bit and has had to relocate a couple of times as a result. Now it takes place at Reeves Park, south of downtown, and regularly attracts huge crowds. I asked Kate how typical it was of this type of festival.
To some degrees, it's typical in the sense that it's blending education with entertainment. But something that is singular to the Norman Fair is it's one of the few free festivals you can attend. Most Renaissance festivals have some type of cover charge when you enter, but the Norman Fair is a pop-up event for 3 days, and it's free, which is also great because they have some years reported like 355,000 people who attend. So it's exceptionally big, and it's spatially very large. And then with that as well, they have the added kind of difficulty of not having permanent structures, where a lot of Renaissance festivals are on land they rent. So you have these permanent villages you can walk through, but Norman is really a, they build it up over the year, and then you get to kind of experience the wonder that they're able to create.
I compare it to building a city.
Linda Lynn is a past coordinator of the fair.
You have to create all the infrastructure that a city would need, like water, sewage, trash, mapping. I mean, we have to map out the fair so participants know where they're going to be setting up their booth, where visitors know to go, where is this stage where I want to see this performance? We have to have streets for that reason, police, fire, medical, everything that a small city would need, we have to make sure that we have at Medieval Fair.
It's quite the undertaking, and all of it makes way for, as Kate put it, the wonder that they're able to create. There's just so much going on. Musicians, jugglers, acrobats, dancers, a human chessboard, live jousting is one of the most popular events, plus all the vendors. And then there's the royal court, headed by King Edward III and his wife, Queen Philippa. They're played by Mark Jackson and Ashley Oliver, respectively. I asked them what their roles entailed.
We're kind of the face of English royalty, kind of, for people to look at and go, oh, there's the king, there's the queen. We hear that a lot whenever we're wandering around the fair. But we also do something where we have open court, and anybody who wants to can come up, visit us, and we will bestow a title upon them. We can knight them. We can make them a princess. We can make them a wizard. We can make them a dark overlord of the universe, you know, whatever it is they want. And so we have a little interaction with them, and, you know, sometimes they'll take pictures with us, but we're basically there just to kind of smile and wave and make people hopefully enjoy their time there.
And okay. Take them back in time, so.
Yeah.
I watch quite a few people getting titles bestowed upon them in rather whimsical exchanges like this one. Sorry that it's a bit hard to hear. It was a very noisy environment.
Good morrow, your highnesses. May I introduce Diaz, who wishes to receive the title of the game maker today.
Game maker? Very well. Diaz, game maker in what capacity?
He says he makes board games.
Board games? Oh, excellent. Do you promise to make the greatest board games the land has ever seen?
Of course I
do. Do you promise to sell them at an affordable price?
Always, always.
Excellent. Third, do you promise to give one to me?
If I can find you, yes.
Excellent. Very well then, Diaz, please kneel. In the name of God, Saint Michael, and chess, I dub you game maker of the realm. You now stand and be recognized as such.
Hip hip! Huzzah!
Hip hip! Huzzah!
Hip hip!
I asked Mark and Ashley if they enjoyed playing their roles. They both enthusiastically affirmed that they did, and Ashley expanded on why.
I like basically seeing the kids smile, their face light up after they get a title bestowed upon them, and then we make little ribbon roses to hand out as little trinkets for the patrons. And it's just an amazing experience seeing everybody, you know, enjoying their time and going back in time type thing.
Is there anything that you particularly don't like?
The English weather sometimes. Yeah. Last year was, that one was a mud fest, I would say.
Ha! There's no getting away from challenging weather in either England or Oklahoma. Though this year's Medieval Fair was pretty lucky in that regard. Let's hope for the same next year, which will take place from the 9th to the 11th of April, 2027. I've put a link to the fair's website on this episode's webpage. Just search for KGOU and How Curious. Many thanks to all of the contributors today, plus Dara Fogel, Cody Clark, and my colleague Hannah France. How Curious is a KGOU public radio production. The managing editor is Logan Layden. David Gray composed our theme music, and I'm Rachel Hopkin. As ever, if you have an idea for a future episode, we'd love to hear about it. So please drop us a line at curious@kgou.org.
You know, every day on Up First, NPR's Golden Globe-nominated morning news podcast, we bring you three essential stories. At the heart of each story are questions. What really happened? What really mattered? What happens next? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious and to follow the facts. Follow Up First wherever you get your podcasts and start your day knowing what matters and why.